ready.
Man, this whole society got our women looking at themselves crazy, man. Can you imagine if a dude was walking around telling him he didn't want to wear a pair of khakis because it made his dick look big, man?
For real talk.
You ain't ready for the relationship your grandmother and granddaddy had. You ready to leave your dude if he don't text you back fast enough.
All the time.
And see, that's what's so crazy to me, right? Because you can be against police brutality and not want cops to die. The two ideas ain't mutually exclusive.
Welcome to the Span Report with your host, Mr. Span.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Span Report podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Span, and this is episode number 70 of the report. And I got a real special guest with me here, man. This is like our fifth time trying to record this episode because Google Plus been on some bullshit the last couple weeks. But I got my man Rod from the Black Guy Who Tips podcast here with me. Say what's up to the people, fam.
What is going on, party people?
Indeed, indeed, man. And like I said, this guy here, we were talking about this, you know, before we got on the show. This guy, this is like the third show he's been on today. Two of them were his own. He had the Black Guy Who Tips episode, and he also did a premium episode, The Nerd Off. And now he's on my show, man. So very much appreciative to have Rod's hardworking ass on the show here with me tonight.
Man, I appreciate you even looking me up to have me on, bro.
Oh, come on, man. You know you're like the godfather of this shit, man.
Appreciate you.
No problem, man. No problem. But before we get into everything with Rod and with the show, got to get the business out of the way. So if you're watching or if you're listening to the Span Report podcast, here's how you can get at me here at the Span Report podcast. Let your voice be heard. You can hit me up on the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemails. I will play those messages on the show and, of course, respond to you on the show as well. You can hit me up at the email. The email to the show is feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. I'll read those and, of course, reply to those on the show as well. Got a few of those to respond to this week. Also, if you want to chop it up with your boy on Twitter or Instagram, hit me up on both of those platforms. My name is Mr._Span on both of those platforms. And for all of your Span Report needs, go to thespanreport.com. All of the podcasts, all of the guest appearances I've made, everything Span Report related, you can go to thespanreport.com and hit me up there. And leave me a Stitcher and iTunes review, man. Your boy needs some of those. I really do. Yeah, man. But my man Rod, man, you've been doing it big. You've been doing it big quite often. Like, you do the show 5 days a week now, man. How is that going?
You know, it's a bit of a grind, but I enjoy it. You know, I think for most people, they just see it as, oh, you get on there and you talk for a couple hours every day. But, you know, we don't have a support staff. We don't have you know, interns, like everything is us. So I pretty much gather all the data and all the pertinent news stories, do all the research throughout the day and figure out the format and topics for each show. So it's definitely, you know, a full-time job plus some, because, you know, with the website, I got to do all the back-end technical stuff. And if anybody loses a password, all that stuff, I'm on top of that too. So yeah, man, It's a lot of work, but I'm just thankful to be able to do this for a living right now.
Indeed, man. Indeed. Now, you mentioned like the amount of work that it takes to do the podcast, all of the technical, the aspect of it, the curation of the stories and things like that. How much of it that makes it onto the show is user generated? Like, say, for instance, like a listener sends you something and, you know, they feel like they want to hear your perspective on this particular topic. How much of that is part of the show and how much of it is just things you found out over the internet or watching TV or whatever that you thought would be interesting?
I would say for user generated content, probably between 2-5% at the most, because to be honest, I take it serious. It's my, you know, it's my job to go find these articles. Most of the time people are only sending me stuff I already seen. Now some of it I've seen and I'm going to cover it anyway, so it's kind of redundant. And then some of it I've seen and I don't want to cover it, because not everything that's newsworthy makes our show, and not everything that a listener may care about is something that we would care about, right? So, yeah. You know, I have people that send me articles sometimes. It's like, yo, this woman had a baby and then she put it in a Ziploc bag and kept it at her work desk and it died and she kept it there for 6 months, man. Y'all gonna talk about it? I'm like, no.
Yeah, I heard about that story too.
Yeah, like I don't have a joke for that one. You know, I did see it, you know, but I don't really like, you know, it's not like I get off on being like, what's the sickest shit we can make up today? You know? So I feel like probably 2-5% maybe on a good day, you know, we might get one story from a listener that I'm like, oh, I had not heard of that. Mm-hmm. And this is a unique perspective on that thing. But most of the time we don't.
Oh, okay. Now, I know one of the big stories that kind of came up this week, man, was the Cornel West and Michael Eric Dyson. The Michael Eric Dyson article that goes to Cornel West. And a lot of folks were making a big deal of Michael Eric Dyson even saying anything to Cornel West. And I know I listened to the show a bit this week and you guys were talking about the pettiness of Michael Eric Dyson, but how you were there for the pettiness of Michael Eric Dyson. I thought I was the only one for a certain degree because it seemed like everybody was on some, man, he shouldn't have said nothing type shit.
Oh, man, I don't even understand people like that, honestly, man. Like, who are these people that let you talk about them forever and don't say anything back? Are you scared of confrontation or what? Because,
yeah,
you know, me personally, man, if I find out your ass talking about me, man, I'm definitely going to have something to say about it. Like, especially if it's unwarranted or unfair, you know, like, I don't know if it's just a sense of justice in me or what, man, but I feel like, you know, people need to hear my side of it too, you know? And yeah. Eric Dyson let that shit go on for 3 years. Like, when was he supposed to say something? And people got mad because it was too much information, but that's on your lazy ass to read. Like, you can either choose not to read it or whatever, but don't pretend like, well, I was okay with it, but then he said too many words. Like, either you were okay with it or you weren't, because a man like that only speaks in too many words. He don't, you know, I've never read a Michael Eric Dyson statement and went, man, that was concise, to the point. No, you know, he always goes extra. And I had no problem with the dude. And I have no problem with the clapback. I have no problem with the personal insults. I have no problem with the pettiness of it. And at the end of the day, I still feel about him the way I kind of feel about Cornell. Smart brother. Sometimes he's on point. Sometimes he's not, just like everybody else.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting to me to watch like some of the interactions or some of the articles, because there were so many think pieces after that article came out. Most of them were talking about, you know, again, how Michael Eric Dyson probably shouldn't have said anything, how this wasn't needed in the black intelligentsia sort of shit, as if we were above having disagreements with one another. But at the same time, I'm thinking, you know, all of these people who were talking about he shouldn't have said anything have popped off for a whole hell of a lot less. Mm-hmm. So it was real interesting to see how many of these folks were just coming out of the woodworks to say, well, he shouldn't have said anything, man. Real talk.
When it's not you, it's easy to say, right? You know, like, everybody does that move where, you know, like, we talk about celebrities. We're like, yo, man, I don't see why Kanye West even said something to that dude. I mean, so what, he called his wife a bitch? You know, y'all famous. And it's like, in the aggregate, you know, like, when you step away from it and you just don't think about it emotionally, very cynically, no one should ever really respond to anything, if we're being honest, unless it's a direct threat. Pretty much all of us should be able to say, well, that's just that person's opinion, and walk away.
Yeah.
But that's not life. And just because I've got $1 billion in my pocket doesn't change the fact that you call my wife a bitch and I'm gonna punch you in your face, right? Like, you know, whether you a rich nigga or a poor nigga, like, it's not like if you put money in my pocket today and then you did the same shit that would have pissed me off yesterday, like, I would be like, well, now I'm not pissed because I'm rich. I'm gonna still be mad. And I think that's what everybody loses. And, you know, some of the voices that stepped up during this debate were just so frustrating, because, you know, Dave Zirin wants to give his opinion about this shit. Like, dude, sit your ass down. Like, you know, this some black shit.
Yeah.
Like, for lack of a better term, like, this some black shit. And your white ass wasn't saying shit when it was straight up, you know, Cornel West dissing Michael Eric Dyson. Yeah. Or, you know, like, you never dressed down Cornel West when he was calling President Obama racial terms and saying he was scared of free black men. But as soon as, you know, Michael Eric Dyson basically comes for Cornell, then you want to try to shut that down. Like, yeah, man, just stay out of it then.
Well, like I said, I think you had made a post on it on Facebook. I said this is like the professorial equivalent to keep my motherfucking name out your mouth.
It is, y'all. You I know, loved it.
That shit was gravy, man. But yeah, man, outside of that though, like we were talking about like the growth of your show, right? Because your show has gotten really big, right? Mm-hmm. Are you ever surprised by any of this at this point?
Yeah, I'm continually surprised by just about everything, man. I think people see me and they see the show and see us in a different light than we see ourselves. So, mm-hmm. You know, me personally, man, every morning I wake up and I see like is money still coming in the account.
Yeah,
it's people still enjoying the show, tweeting about it. I never take any of that for granted because you know tomorrow it could all be gone. You know, yeah. It's like. I worked a shitty job for way too fucking long to be sitting up here acting like, you know, my shit don't stink when it comes to what we do. I'm very proud of what we do, but the reason that we continue to work hard and try to be the best we could be at it and try to put out a very funny quality product every morning is because I always think, you know, this shit could just be me back at a cubicle one day.
Yeah.
Oh, trapped in cubicle hell.
Yeah, man. Now, one of the things, another thing that I wanted to ask you, and this is something that I asked my boy Tars, because, you know, when he started his business, was the growing pains of doing that. And what were one of the things that, in starting the Black Guy Who Tips as a business, what were one of the growing pains or one of the things that you simply weren't ready for in starting the Black Guy Who Tips as a financial entity?
Oh man, I would just say the accounting part of it, taxes, mm-hmm. You know, shit like that. You need to keep track of all the time. I keep track of it, but we had to hire an accountant because I'm like, nah, you know what I mean? Like, the thing is, I want to hire an accountant because I don't want to break no laws. Yeah. I don't want nobody coming to take all this shit. I don't want, you know, motherfucker hit me up 3 years from now, like the MSNBC host and being like, where our money at? You know, so that was probably the biggest thing. But, you know, to be honest, we have been running this as a business before it was officially a business for years. You know, it's like anything that you're passionate about. You're pretty much doing a full time job before it's even time. You know?
Yeah. Now, as far as making a living off the podcast, and I know a lot of people when it comes to podcasting, like I remember when I would tell my family and when I would tell my friends that I do a podcast, and they, you know, you had that educational aspect where you had to start telling folks what a podcast is. And then the next question that usually comes up after that is, do you make any money off of that? Do you, you know, are people paying you to do that? Now, nobody pays me to do this. I do it because I like to do it. But you're now in a position to where you can make money doing your podcast. And I know a lot of folks want to get to a point where you are. What are the most common mistakes that you think folks coming into podcasting make when it comes to, say, for instance, making money doing a podcast?
I would think, you know, was one, I haven't like, I don't have a lot of experience making the mistakes, I guess. So,
yeah.
You know, I can't be 100% sure for everybody else, but just I will say I'm an avid listener of podcasts.
Yeah.
And I'll go by my experience with that. And I've watched several podcasts kind of become monetized. The first thing I would say is that way too many people come into it thinking that it's just a way to make money or that it's going to turn into that. And I would say for the vast majority of people, it won't. You know, like, not saying everybody needs to give up, but just, you know, you need to be providing something that is specific, consistent, and quality, you know what I mean? So if you have low quality sound, if you have low quality analysis of your topics, if you're just reading articles, the same shit everybody else is saying, you're saying the same shit, you know, I would say that's a big, you know, pitfall. A lot of people think they're better than they are, you know, just like everybody thinks they're funny, right? Yeah, you never met a person that says, I don't have a sense of humor. Everybody thinks that they have a sense of humor, right? But not everybody's funny, you know? So, and the same thing applies to the podcast thing. Because you pick up a mic and record, you already are kind of have somewhat of an elevated opinion of yourself. You know, you think everybody should hear your opinion.
Indeed.
I definitely feel that way about myself. But at the same time, you know, there has to be some humility there where you're thinking about what can I work on to make it better? Because if you pay attention to a lot of the feedback you get, even the lack of feedback is a type of feedback that tells you what you're doing wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and it's about having that humility in yourself to humble down and be like, these are the things I can change and get better at. And these are the things that I'm unwilling to change and get better at or whatever. You know, these are the things that make me. And I feel like a lot of people, the line that they draw on what they can change to be better and what is actually about what it is that is about them that they can't change. A lot of people blur that line real heavy. Mm-hmm. So, like, say people come to you and they're like, hey, man, I really like your show, but, you know, it's a lot of homophobia on there, man. I can't get down with that or whatever, right?
Yeah.
If you're like, fuck it, that's just what I got to do, then you got to be willing to settle with that's the amount, that's the kind of listener you're going to get, the kind of person that's like, you know, a homophobic dude that don't want to, you know, support you or whatever. Like, you got to think about that as a business decision. Another thing, like I said earlier, consistency.
Yeah.
You know, no replacement for it. It's really no replacement for it. Everybody's comes to you with these big ideas and these grand things, and they bite off more than they can chew, and it'll knock you down every single time. And, you know, and I know you've experienced it too, especially with format.
Yeah.
Oh, like the format thing makes all the difference in the world because like I remember you used to put like songs between breaks and stuff like that. And after a while you realize like, yo, I'm kicking my own ass with all this work.
Yeah.
And it's not really enhancing my product. Like every once in a while you get that person that's like, yo, man, I never heard that song until you played it. But a lot of times it's just like, they must be skipping these songs because I don't get enough feedback on my music, you know?
Yeah.
We used to have an intro and outro song every single episode. Man, I cut that shit out. I don't think we got a fucking email about that shit. Like, I'm like, man, I was doing all that work for nothing, you know? Like, yeah. I care. So I would say that's part of it. And then you need to work it like a job before it's a job, man. Like, you know, it's like if you said, I want to get paid to play basketball. Well, newsflash. You need to be playing at a professional level of expertise before anyone will give you a check, right? Yep. Like, everybody wants to get paid to play basketball, but it's the dude that busts his ass, practices, gets better and better, goes above and beyond the Call of Duty. That's the guy who gets paid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's never the guy who's like, once I get a check, I'm going to start playing hard. Nah, that dude won't get a check. So those are the main mistakes I think I see.
Yeah, man. You know, speaking about like format and things, like I remember I used to like kill myself like trying to get 5 or 6 songs to play on an episode and trying to make sure that I didn't play this particular song too close to the last episode. Things like that take 12 hours to do one fucking episode. So yep. Yeah, man, like think small things like that and it, like format, consistency. I remember like you just said something about like whether or not like someone sends you an article or whatever and you don't have a joke for that. Like I used to run into that a lot because I was trying to be funny so much when I first started podcasting and I'm not a comedian. You know what I mean? It's only so far my comedic mind can go in trying to make the regular shit funny. So right. Like I was killing myself trying to turn regular shit funny when that wasn't what I'm just not that dude. So yeah, man, all of that stuff, man, is like, those are gold.
I know, and another thing I would add is, and it, you know, I don't know how popular this statement is, but a lot of people need to accept that they need to be fans of the genre of podcasting in order to know what a good podcast is.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that I listen to and I can tell they don't listen to anything but themselves. And while, you know, I'll still be a fan and I'll still enjoy it, that's the shit that keeps them from understanding the entire field. Like, I listen to a lot of different shows and I use that knowledge that I get from each show. Like, oh, well, I like this thing that they're doing. You know, I see why that works. Now, maybe it doesn't work for our show, And maybe there's not even a variation of whatever the thing is that works for it. But it's something I'm picking up where I'm just like, wow, listeners respond to this. You know, like Serial. Serial did a thing where basically they didn't have a show over like 40 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, and very compelling, you know, drama type stuff. And I'll compete people on that, like, okay, I see. So you can kind of hook people like that. We don't do a show that way, but it's still good information to have so I know what people are listening to.
Yeah.
So I listen to a show, Keith and the Girl. I'll probably never not listen to them because they were like the first podcast I really loved.
Yeah.
But I watched them monetize. I watched them, you know, I watched them go back and forth on, you know, with hosts. Like, I figured out, like, how to go with, you know, because they used to be dating, you know, but I listened to them and I was like, yo, me and my wife go back and forth like that all the time, mm-hmm. you know, just talking. And why, you know, people will want to hear that if we do it a good enough job and, you know, stuff like that. And I think a lot of people do themselves a disservice because they either only listen to podcasts as to try to pick up shit to do for their own.
Yeah.
Or they don't listen to them at all. And I think you need to listen to podcasts as a fan to understand a fan's mentality. And when you realize what works for you, that's when you realize how to make your shit work for somebody else.
Yeah. And you know what? That's one of those things too, man. Like, I remember there was a Facebook group that I'm a part of. I would post episodes of my podcast there. And really it was just a way of trying to figure out how people are receiving what it is that I'm doing. And I got so much critique out of that group though. It was great though. Cause like it was one sister that hit me up. She was like, yeah, I like your show and all, but like that background music is really distracting. You know, like I can't really pay attention to what you're saying. Cause I'm too busy like dancing to this music you got playing in the background. Little things like that. Like, and being able to listen to it and take that in, those go like a really long way. It's a really tremendous thing to like actually take in the feedback that you're getting, man. So, yeah, brother.
Definitely have to take your ego out of it because, you know, I do have an ego. And, you know, when I hear certain suggestions, I'm like, my first response is like, but that's not what I want to do, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Sometimes, you know, that person is right because, you know, in hindsight, like, I wish we had never had background music. Even with our sound being as shitty as it was when we started, I feel like the background music didn't cover anything up. It just probably made it, you know, it probably made it even a little harder to understand everything that we were saying. And it was a crutch that we never needed, but I wasn't mentally ready to jump off that ledge. And, you know, looking back, I wish we didn't have it.
Yeah, podcast secret. That's what the background music was for. To squash out some of that background noise that y'all might have heard, like that music was just kind of like trying to mask that shit. Real talk.
Exactly.
Yeah, man. Now, is talking about like the growth of the medium, especially podcasting. Like you mentioned, Serial. Serial's like a really big phenomenon in podcasting. We're starting to see all of these major, you know, like entities really take an interest in podcasting. Like I know ESPN does a lot of podcasting now. A lot of their shows that they show on television are now podcasts now. You know, a lot of rappers have podcasts. You know, everybody has a podcast right now. Podcasting is kind of blowing up. Now, there are these lists that come out. You know, it's like every now and again, you'll see a list. Mashable did a list of about the 11 diverse podcasts that give you a fresh perspective on life. That got a little run. I remember the Huffington Post gave you guys a write-up. Where's My 40 Acres? I think the Black Astronauts were also mentioned in that. And BuzzFeed also came out with a list of black podcasting, right? And you guys got mentioned on that list, right?
Yeah.
So, like, when these lists come out, because I know a lot of people, they get excited about these lists. And there's a lot made about these lists. What is your attitude about these lists featuring black podcasters?
Well, I never get too excited about any of that shit because the list is subjective. You know, I said this the first time that the list came out and we weren't on it for BuzzFeed, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to look beyond, you know, follow the money, basically. The list was made so that BuzzFeed could promote that they had a new black podcast, right?
Yeah.
And BuzzFeed does have some internet traction after years of, you know, sweat equity put into their brand. So I'm pretty sure their podcast is probably trending right now on iTunes.
Right.
You know, like, can't be mad at that. But that's what that list was, to generate attention, you know, and to get us podcasters to go, hey, look at this list. And then our fans would click on it and maybe they would see that BuzzFeed podcast and they go listen to it. That was really all they wanted to do.
Yeah.
I can't be mad because it's subjective, though, because like if I told you, Mr. Span, give me the top 10 black podcasts in the game right now, you're going to miss something.
Indeed.
You know what I mean? Because just like you're not privy to everything. Nobody is. So while I did see a lot of people getting angry that we were left off, that Twib was left off, that Words on 40 Acres was left off the first time, mm-hmm. I never got angry. And I even went on the show and said it. I said it on the post on there. I was like, my thing is, if they have a comment section, which a lot of these places do.
Yeah. You know,
if they have a comment section, why not just go to the comment section and be like, hey, I'm a fan of this. Can you, you know, maybe give them a shout out if you do a part two to this article?
Yeah.
You know, and that's all, like, to me, that's the best thing that can come out of something like that, because I saw like a little bit of infighting, a little bit of like, why them, not me, a little bit of, you know, this don't matter anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, like stuff that's really not productive, honestly, and it really should never come down to us fighting amongst ourselves, because that's pretty much the opposite of everything that I believe in.
Yeah.
You know, as far as these podcast things are concerned.
Yeah.
And when we're fighting, it's like, what are we fighting for? You know, like, what are we fighting for? While we were talking, I went and looked up on our site stats. That Mashable article got us 79 clicks.
Okay.
79 clicks to TBGWT over the past, like, that's got to have been, like,
what, a month ago or so, maybe? I don't know.
Like, that ain't worth fighting for.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That ain't worth me dissing another podcast. It's not worth me being passive aggressive about somebody else making it. It's not worth me making a rallying cry to everybody. It's not worth it. It, like, what does work though, and from my experience, is, hey man, why don't you come be on my show?
Yeah.
You know, and then people, because that's what I hear most of the time, because I listen to a lot of these podcasts that we be, hey, we heard about you from Black Ops. Hey, heard about you. Hey, long time fan, just, you know, heard about you back in the day when y'all was on the Black Isle Tips. Like, that's dope to me. That's way over than a fucking article, man. Honestly, the article ain't gonna make us no money, dog. Like, once you monetize your shit, a lot of this stuff becomes like, is it money or is it not money?
Right.
I don't mean to make it as on some callous shit, because I do love having fans and support and all that shit. But end of the day, if people stop listening, I don't eat. So it's not really about mushy good feelings of like, I made a list. I'm really looking at this shit like, okay, so 79 people clicked and 0 people signed up for premium. Why get excited about that?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. You know, and I think a lot of it too is a lot of it, I believe, is just like putting in the work. You know what I mean? I kind of feel like, you know, those things will come if the work is being put in. Now, granted, there will be some people or some entities that have a leg up because they have the promotional push behind them to get them in front of a list like that, to where they're visible like that. Like, I know, who was that? RuPaul had a show called What's the Tea. Now, I know there's another podcast called What's the Tea that has absolutely nothing to do with RuPaul. But there's a promotional tool behind him to kind of push that forward. So a lot of it, I believe, is just putting forth the work and not so much worrying about whether or not you're going to get these accolades at this particular juncture. When they come, they will come. But at the same time, put in the work and be loyal to your listeners, because at the end of the day, that's who you're really supposed to be doing it for. The people who really want to hear you are going to continue to hear you whether you make that list or not.
Exactly, man. And I've always believed, like, and I think I will say this, the value of those lists to me has always been about our shared camaraderie with our fans and colleagues. Mm-hmm. It's always been about that. And I do take a personal pride when we make any type of list in the fact that I feel like of most podcasts, when we make a list, everybody makes a list.
Yeah.
Like, I, you know, and that's not shade or slight to any other podcast. I think people should do their shows how they feel comfortable doing their shows. Our show, I feel very comfortable reaching out to people like, you know, oh man, I like this person. Let's have them on. You know, yeah. That's just my, the way that we are, you know? So if, you know, we're more like a gateway podcast, you know, a lot of people listen to us and then later on, like, you know, the people, you know, I've heard people that have said like, yo, I'm a big fan of, say, you know, Span Report now. It's my favorite podcast. I got turned on from riding them. They used to be my favorite podcast, but now you my favorite podcast. I've never been mad once. Like, yeah. I'm always like, good. Like, you found a home, a better fit. You know what I mean? You found the thing that you were looking for, and nothing can replace that. You know what I mean? And I will always be happy that we were the conduit to something like that. And trust me, it's gonna happen for us the same way, you know, like, and as long as nobody has a ego or pride about it as far as like getting angry or upset, I feel like the world is your oyster, man. It's just a matter of not getting too emotional about this shit, because, you know, it's still kind of the wild, wild west, and it's a new frontier for us out here. And the last thing we need to be doing is letting a list or whatever cause any type of rivalries and shit, because, you know, it's really, I know what people think it is a competition, but it's really not a competition.
Yeah.
Like, people either make time for you or they don't. Nothing you can do, like, there's nothing, if someone's a hardcore fan of Mr. Span and that's all they fucking listen to is Mr. Span, they want to hear one dude give his perspective, have guests on, cover his feedback, if they, like, they want to hear Mr. Span's opinion.
Yeah.
There's not a fucking thing I can say on your show that'll make them come to my show and feel the same way they do about you.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be that way. You know what I'm saying? So
right.
So I like the fact that you know, whenever we do have these lists or these milestones or whatever, that, you know, it's everybody getting on when we get on, and vice versa. If shit, when Twib makes a list, I feel proud because I'm a fan of Twib. You know
right.
what I'm saying?
Right.
And, you know, by extension, you know, I've been on the show, so it's like, shit, we all made it, man. Why not feel that way about everybody?
Indeed, man. Indeed. Now, another thing, too, because I think a lot of times, remember, like I said before, a lot of times when folks ask me about podcasting and why am I doing it, is there any money involved? When you tell people about podcasting that aren't necessarily familiar with the medium, what is, like, one of the biggest misconceptions about podcasting that you've come across?
I don't know. I guess I'd say most people just don't understand what it is, really. Like, and I'll sum it up by being like, it's an internet radio show.
Yeah, me too.
Like, I don't have time for explaining the whole thing and the iPod and all that shit.
Yeah.
And, you know, I tell them, like, you know, a couple apps or something. But, you know, one of the good things about our fans having our back and the way that we monetize and the way that people continue to support us, and as people fall off, some new people come on and shit.
Yeah.
One of the best things about that is there's a level of security attached to what we do that I don't feel like I constantly need to be pressing. You know what I mean? Like, if somebody tells me, ask me what I do for a living, you know, and I'll have a podcast, and then it just kind of like sound like they're kind of noncommittal, like they don't really listen to podcasts and doesn't sound like something they'd be interested in, I'm good leaving it at that. Like, let's, you know, what's it about? And, you know, it's comedy and shit, man. Anyway, so you watched the game last night? You know? Like, I don't feel like I have to press, man. And that's a good feeling, man. We've been very, very, very fortunate, and not just the listeners having our back, but advertisers and meeting good people that really look out for us, man. So, you know, definitely appreciate it.
Indeed, brother, indeed. Now, of course, because you have one of the more nuanced, pragmatic brains I've come across in quite a while, I got to get you, like, to get your perspective on some of this news that has been happening over the last couple of weeks since the last time I went on. So, there was a story about a Western Michigan mechanic who decided that he didn't want to service any gay patrons. And I got this article here, so just a second.
There's a set of behavior rules in my place of business. I operate my life on Christian values, and for me to not take that into my business, I think would be hypocritical.
Brian Clawater feels he should be able to run his automotive diesel engine repair shop how he'd like to, and that includes running it under his religious beliefs. He took to Facebook to express his rights. And then the sparks flew.
And I did choose homosexuality as an example when I spoke about immoral behavior. But that's definitely become the hot button issue. I did speak about guns. They're welcome in my shop, so much so that I've offered discounts for those that want to carry their weapon into my shop. I spoke about racism. And then, you know, further on the immoral behavior, I spoke about dishonesty and thievery. These are all things that I talk about that are acceptable and aren't acceptable in my place of business.
The reaction. Hundreds of comments, shares, and likes surprise Clawater, but he isn't scared of it.
It's not popular to go against the grain of what you see across the national media, so it's an uncomfortable position to be in. But when presented with an opportunity to share my beliefs, I need to stand firm on those.
But what has surprised him is the outright hate, the attacks, threats, and language used by those disagreeing with his viewpoint. But he wants to stress his comments on sexuality were only a small part of his post. The bigger issue is his rights as a business owner.
If I say something that you don't agree with, you don't attack me personally. Offer me your side. And I think a lot of times we're guilty of not lending that ear.
He didn't mean to start a controversy, and he knows he should have realized the consequences before posting. But the opinion is out there, and there's nothing that is going to take them back now.
Hopefully I get a little bit of hate mail, a couple pats on the back, and we go back to fixing trucks.
Clawater says he has never asked someone if they are gay or refused service to somebody he expects to be. He just wants to use a don't ask, don't tell approach at his shop.
All right. Now, first thing that comes, like the first question that comes to my mind is like, how many people are actually like, fucking in his shop?
Like, gay people at that, right?
Yeah, gay people at that. Like, who goes to the garage? It's like, you know what? I'm gonna go suck mad dick up in here today.
Yeah. Hey man, let's go be gay over by the damn pep boys.
And you know, it's fucked up, man. Like, I've been kind of like going in on this the last few weeks, man. Especially like after that Religious Freedom Act passed in Indiana, where like, what the fuck does someone being gay have to do with you actually doing the work that they're paying you to do? I don't get that. And as someone who would identify himself as a Christian, I'm sitting back like, dude, seriously, this is how you feel like you're going to represent the religion, is just like deciding that, you know what, I'm not going to fuck with these people over here. They can't get their truck fixed because he likes sucking dick.
Yep.
And another thing too, like I was wondering, like we're starting to see a whole lot of this where folks are starting to come out and they're making these kind of, you know, these views known. How much of this do you think is a ploy to have a GoFundMe account hit them up with a shit ton of money?
Yeah, it's been very profitable for a lot of these folks. So at this point, you have to start doubting their sincerity.
Yeah.
You know, and the other thing I wonder about too is how come this never extends to the other sins? Like, will you serve a fornicator?
Yeah. Yeah.
Will you serve a glutton? Like, if a fat person comes in, you'd be like, nah, man. you want to serve people with guns, but thou shalt not kill is one of the commandments. Yeah. Like, it's so selective. And the only reasoning, the only rationale that is left is that you're just homophobic and you're couching it in religion because you're too much of a coward to come out and just say how you really feel.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think it was a couple episodes ago, I was talking about whether or not are they asking women, are they virgins when they come through the shop? Because virgins should be stoned to death, according to the Bible. Are you asking men, are they looking at women lustfully? Because if they are, then you should be plucking his eyes out, because that's a sin also. So the fact that they go to the extreme of saying, well, you know what, I'm just not fucking with these gay people. It's like, well, you kind of picking and choosing when and where you're going to apply this Bible book, you know? So, yeah, man, it's like, yet again, another ignorant motherfucker gets on the news to say, well, I'm not going to serve these people for being who they are. And, you know, for whatever reason, thinks that it's okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like I said, man, it's very, very weird, the obsession people have with gay people, man. And you know he's mostly talking about dudes, like,
yeah.
Two women walked in there. He probably wouldn't even say shit, but he probably get some lube out. But, you know, I don't know. And then the thing is, man, why do y'all think gay people want to come to fucking your auto shop so bad? That, you know what I mean? Like, what's so irresponsible about the pizza you serve at weddings that gay people got to have it? Like, get the fuck out of here, man. It's all just grandstanding and a way to just say I'm the biggest homophobe. You know, it's like a competition.
Yeah, and the fact that they can get money for this kind of ignorant shit, too, I think is driving a lot of this. Because I don't even think this guy would even make that kind of statement had that pizza place in Indiana not got over $800,000 in donations from GoFundMe. I don't think he could say anything about it.
Yeah, a bakery called Sweet Cakes in Oregon, Sweet Cakes by Melissa, raised $110,000 to pay for a fine that they got because it is illegal to discriminate against gay people, and they did it anyway. The fine was for $150,000. They raised $110,000 before GoFundMe finally shut it down because you're not supposed to be able to raise money for illegal shit. But that, like, that tells you the state we're in as a society that, you know, this is profitable now.
Yeah, indeed it is, man. And it's sad as shit. It's real sad, man. Another story, another little crazy story that I kind of came across. There was a mother who went to a school and knocked the teacher the fuck out. So we're going to let me pull this up real quick. Oh damn, I don't have it. I thought I had this story, but here's what happened. Like a kid went to she called her mom after like an incident happened between her and the teacher. They don't say exactly what happened between her and the teacher, but this mother went to the school to confront the teacher about, quote unquote, putting her hands on my daughter. And in a subsequent confrontation, the teacher ends up knocked out. Students end up jumping in on the fight, also helping to knock out this teacher. And it's one of those things where I started wondering, Are students out of control to a certain degree? Is it the students that are out of control? Is it the parents that are out of control? Or is this a combination of both?
Well, I think LL Cool J kind of said it at first when he said, "Mama said knock you out." Who else would talk about that teacher? I'll say this, man. If a teacher put their hands on your kid, because, you know, like, I don't want to skip over that.
Yeah.
I ain't saying you should, right? You should resolve this peacefully or talk to a upper management or principal or something. But I understand.
Now, I got a question for you. What constitutes putting a hand on a kid, right?
Right.
That's the thing, because they didn't necessarily say whether or not this mother, like, whether or not the teacher had was breaking up a fight, whether or not she just tried to restrain the student, whether or not she was just trying to prevent the student from doing something. It didn't say any of that. It just said that this woman went to the school because her daughter told her that the teacher put her hands on her. So that's one of those things. Like, there's a whole lot more to be added to that. Like, what constitutes putting hands on a kid? And another thing, too, like, I don't know if, like, they did this where you are, man. Did they do corporal punishment in schools when you were coming up?
Yeah, when I was coming up, yeah.
Yeah, like, they used to whoop our ass in school.
Yeah, but the parents used to whoop our
that. That, too.
That, too.
We used to get that, too.
Yeah, parents don't do that shit necessarily anymore, so it's, like, a different mentality. It's like, you better not hit my kid, because I don't even hit my fucking kid, so.
Yeah.
Now I'm about to knock your ass out. Take out this frustration I got from not hitting this kid.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny too. Like, there's sometimes I wonder, like, because we are the generation with the kids now, right? But how much of that was because this happened to us as kids that we grew up and we were like, you know what, I'm not going to allow this to happen to my kid when I grow up. You know what I mean? And another thing too, like it, to a certain degree, there was a point in time where it seemed as if teachers and parents were on the same page when it came to not only just education, but the disciplining of children. Not so much now anymore. A lot of times where like a kid gets bad grades or whatever, a parent will go to the school, and I got friends who like kind of went into the teaching field. The parents that come to the school and blame the teacher as to why the kid is screwing up in school, and not necessarily coming to the kid and telling you like, you know, you need to pull this shit up or you can't do X, Y, and Z. So yeah. I wonder how much of that is a result of, you know, some of us parents just kind of like, you know what, my kid can do no wrong kind of shit.
Well, I will say, I feel like it's always been that way, right? Like, I don't think our generation is much different from the generation before us or the generation after us. I think we feel that way because we're getting older and now we can see the other perspective, like the other side of it. When we're kids, you know, like I remember when I was a kid, you know, I had a cousin that was terrible in school. He would come home, tell his mama that all the teachers was racist, and she would go up to school and like hell. You know, and you know, that's no different than the parents that do that shit now. You know, it's but I think there's just certain people that, and it's hard not to concentrate on them because they're the most distracting, but there's certain people who they ain't gonna be shit and their kids ain't gonna be shit, and they're gonna make sure that their kids ain't gotta ever be shit, you know?
Yeah.
And when you see it, it makes you feel like the whole world is like that because it pisses you off so bad, you know, because now my kid got to be in class with your kid and your kid ain't shit. And you as a parent, a kid, you know what I mean? Like, you don't want nothing better for your kid either. And which is, you know, like the opposite of why you should be a parent. Like, so, you know, I definitely could relate to it. And I think anybody that has children leans more, at least the ones that I've talked to, lean more towards like the way that you talk about it, where it's like, yo, this wasn't like it this when I was growing up. It's even worse now.
Yeah.
And I don't have kids, you know. So I think it's because you're seeing it every day, you know, through your kid. And I'm not. And so I have a much more like statistical analysis of a lot of the problems that people contribute towards young people, you know. Like I statistically, pregnancy rate is much lower than when we were coming up.
Yeah, it is.
So is drug use. So is crime. You know, like statistically, people forget how hard we came up necessarily in the era when the crack epidemic was fucking ridiculous and HIV epidemic, like, and teen pregnancy epidemic. Like, we came up in some pretty dire straits. And then we'll turn around and look at the Drake kids and be like, y'all some problems. I'm like, nah, these are the best kids we're gonna get. And hopefully the next generation will be even better than them. You know, that being said, they still kids and, you know, you can't help but want to kick one in the ass every once in a while because they kids and they do kid shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, it's funny, man. I remember something my uncle told me a long time ago coming up. I think I might have been 17. And he said some shit to me, man. I'll never forget it. He said, you know what? Teenagers are dumb as shit, but y'all think y'all know every fucking thing.
Right.
And I was 17 when he told me that. And at the time, I'm thinking, man, you don't know what the fuck you talking about. But now I'm like, he is goddamn right, man. I look at some of my younger cousins, man. I'm like, man, y'all really don't know. Y'all some wild kids, man. Like, real talk, I don't know how good y'all got it.
Yo, you don't know what you don't know until you know it, right?
Until you know it, yeah.
So that's one of my things. I try to have empathy and patience.
Yeah,
which is very hard, you know. It's a difficult. Some people don't have it. I think I have a natural inclination towards it, but I'm an introvert and I don't like expending a lot of energy on people. So sometimes I'll lose it, you know what I mean, on a micro level. Well, I'm just like, God damn, nigga, stop asking me these questions. But in general, you know what I'm saying? Like, I try to have that and be more understanding of people. And, you know, teenagers included, man, sometimes they do some of the dumbest things, but you just got to think they only got 15, 17 years of life experience.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully they don't fuck up too bad. They can make it to a day where they can look back on that and be like, oh, I see why that decision was not the best decision and I wouldn't make that decision now. But, you know, we just got to accept that these guys are kids and shit and, You know, and some of it's just a stylistic choice, right? Like,
yeah,
there's inherently there is nothing wrong. If nothing else, it's probably even better that kids like look up to Drake now. But as an adult, the part of me that grew up in the 90s will never, ever, ever be okay with that. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, man.
You know, probably better that the best rap star in the game right now he's not violent. He doesn't promote crime. He doesn't sell drugs. He cusses a little bit. He's a bit misogynistic, but like, you know, he's emotional. He's vulnerable. That's probably a better state for most kids to grow up in. An honest, like, you know, you don't have to front and try to, you know, but me, I can't help it. I grew up in an era where we was like all trying to front like we was from New York and acting like we thought we was going to be 50 Cent or, you know, maybe we were listening to UGK and talking about pimping and bitches and shit. Doing none of this, by the way, right?
Right.
Like, so I just feel like, you know, a lot of this is just, you know, preference and we get stuck on that shit. But in general, man, I feel like these kids ain't doing too bad, man.
Indeed, man. Yeah, you know what? It's funny too. Like, I was talking to my daughter, man. Like last week, we went to the Science Center. That was one of the like cool things we did over the weekend. And like she was telling me, I was asking her about some of the music that she listens to. And I'm gonna be honest, man. I was just like, you know what? I'm glad you listening to that as opposed to some of the shit that I grew up on.
Mm-hmm.
Like
yeah.
I grew up on Ice Cube. I grew up on the Ghetto Boys. I grew up on like Fifth Ward Board, like some hardcore shit. And it's like she's listening to, like I even let her hear some of the shit that I grew up on. She's like, oh no, daddy. Oh no, I couldn't listen to none of that. And it's cool that she likes Drake. It's cool that she likes what's this? She likes Dej Loaf. And it's funny to me, like when kids talk about Dej Loaf, because I always think about Jeremiah. It sounds like Jeremiah trying to rap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, man. But
I remember we grew up on one of the most reprehensible times for a lot of this stuff. And it's funny because if you were able to nobody got out of that unscathed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like if the fact that I could just probably walk into a room of, I don't know, 20 people our age.
Yeah.
And start singing, "When I Met You Last Night, Baby."
It would take. Before you opened up that gap.
Right. Would take long before everybody was in there talking about, even had you lick my balls and, you know what I mean? Yeah. We ain't no better than these kids, but it's like we get older and we just forget.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a big part of it, man. That's a very big part of it. We just kind of tend to forget some of the ratchet shit that we was into, and we look down upon the ratchet shit that our kids are into now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. But, another story, man, that I wanted to talk about. I know this story is kind of a couple weeks old, but it kind of goes into a unfortunate theme that's been happening with us, with black people and whatever, was the killing of Eric Scott. I'm sorry, was it Eric Harris? I'm sorry. Eric Harris was chased down by Tulsa police, shot one of the police officers so eloquently or ineloquently, said "fuck your breath" as the man was trying to breathe after he was shot and everything else. And one of the things I kind of wanted to pick your brain about,
mm-hmm,
was like the systemic problems in law enforcement that kind of leads to so many of these types of deaths, like how systemic this kind of thing is where it's happening so frequently. Is it one of those things where you kind of feel like, you know, we know this thing happens regularly, but it's just now folks have video cameras and we're just now seeing it?
Yeah, I don't think it's happening more, but we're definitely more aware of it. If anything, black people been known.
Yeah.
And this is more of us kind of going to America like, see, this is what we've been talking about.
Yeah.
Like, we're not paranoid. We're not crazy. You guys are doing this to us and way more often than you do it to anybody else.
Yeah. You know, and it was another thing too, because of the amount of backlash that police officers are getting into. I saw a video last week. It was a young man. I think his name was, what was his name? Walter William Stack. He did a video where he was defending police officers. I want to play this video here real quick. Just a second.
Usually I don't do these kind of videos, but I feel like this one was necessary. I was in Lexington maybe about 10 minutes ago taking care of some business, and I was pulling out of the courthouse, taking a left. And the lane was filled up with traffic, but the turning lane that was a few feet up ahead of me was free. So I made my left turn, and I proceeded through the median until I got to the turning lane. An officer pulls up behind me, throws on his lights. After understanding that he was there for me, I pulled off to the side, and he came up and he said, "How you doing? Yada yada yada." So the reason I pulled you over is for improper use of the median. He told me what I did, asked for my license and my registration. I gave that to him. He left for a while. Now I will say that while he was gone, and while he was with me, I made sure my hands were on the steering wheel. I made sure to speak very politely, as I always do. I did what he told me to do. I handed him the information, and I sat there, and I waited, and I turned my music down. A few minutes later, the guy comes back, hands me my stuff, and he explains, you know, the median needs to be open for emergency vehicles, blah, 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 blah. I was in the wrong. I didn't realize it. I just did it out of habit. He gave me a warning, and I was about my way. Now, the point of this is to say that I am an African-American male. This gentleman was Caucasian. There were no problems. He did his job. I did what I was supposed to do. And that was it. You know, I feel like people need to understand that not all officers are crooked. Not all officers are racist, bad people. And not all people who get shot or tased or arrested by officers are innocent victims. You know, just because you're black doesn't mean you're a victim. Just because you're white doesn't mean you're a racist. Just because you're a cop doesn't mean you're a bad person. This world really needs to stop putting labels on people and things and see them as who they are. People doing jobs, doing things. Ignorance has no color. God doesn't see color. Why should we?
All right. I don't know how young that dude was, but that sounded like a very young perspective to me. I don't think anybody's ever argued that all officers are crooked, that all officers are racist. I don't think that's ever come up at all. But I saw this video being promoted quite a bit after the killing of Eric Harris. What are your thoughts on what we just heard?
Yeah, like you said, it sounds young. And we just talked about how young people kind of think they know everything at a certain age.
Yeah.
And I'm chalking it up to that right now. Very difficult to hear that because it puts you in a situation where you're almost rooting against this young black man's innocence.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, wait till it happens to you.
Yeah.
And then you'll understand, right? Like, and it's sad because I don't want to ever feel like that about another black person. I hope he can go his whole life being that racially unaware, and because his life is just that balanced, right? And I really hope that that's what happens. I hope he lives his whole life feeling like, hey, man, as long as I walk out here respecting myself, the police will respect me.
Yeah.
But way too many of us have gotten that lesson that that's not true, you know? And I hope that he doesn't get it, man, because, you know, it's going to suck, man. It sucked the day I lost my innocence with the police, you know? It sucks when everybody has that moment where they're like, damn, man, the system is rigged. And
yeah,
he just hadn't had it yet.
Yeah. What was your most, like, traumatic experience with the police?
Man, I would just say, and I've told this story a bunch of times, but the time I got pulled over for a quote unquote broken headlight, it was not broken.
Yeah.
I was a college student in Fayetteville, North Carolina, working night shift at Wendy's. They made me close.
Yeah.
Even though I had 8 o'clock classes, these motherfuckers
They don't care.
You know how they do. You know how they do. They first couple weeks, it was cool. Then by the third week, it was like, oh, Bobby didn't come in. You think you can stay till 3 a.m? Right. So I'm driving home and I'm already pissed because I'm like, man, I'm in school. I don't got time for this shit. I need to study.
Yeah.
And cop car pulls up behind me, flashes the lights. I'm like, man, I know I'm not speeding. You know, I got a bag of Wendy's in my drive, in my passenger seat. I'm wearing a Wendy's uniform. I got a Wendy's hat on. I'm wearing a name tag. Like, you know, so, you know, I pull over and I put my hands up, you know, like put my hands straight up so you can see them through the window that I ain't got shit and I don't want no problems. Right.
Yeah.
I'm from Charlotte. I'm not from Fayetteville. So automatically, I'm like, yo, I know the gang. I'm from a city. You know what I'm saying? I had just read about a black man that got shot through his rear passenger door because he was trying to get his baby out of the back seat, and the dude thought it was a weapon, so he shot him. Like that. Damn. That happened that week, you know. So dude comes over. Why you got your hands up? I'm like, man, I just wanted you to understand that, you know, I don't want no problems. My hands are up. I don't have anything in the car. He's like, where you coming from? Nigga, I got on Wendy's, everything. Smelling like fries. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just coming from work, sir. You know, I'm a scholarship student. You know, I had to throw that in.
Yeah.
It's like I'm already acquitting myself. Like, I'm one of the good ones, man. Please, you know?
Yeah.
So he's like, all right, well, let me see your license. About this, you know, I give him my license, you know, I look up, man, it's like three other cop cars. I'm like, what the fuck going on, man? Like, I fit the description.
Yeah, they pop up quick, don't they?
Right. I'm like, the Wendy's bandit on the loose, man, at 3 a.m. So, dude comes back. He's like, yeah, man, your headlights out. You know, make sure you get that checked out. You know, that's why I stopped. I'm like, okay. So I get home. I get back to the dorm. Don't turn off the car. Just get out the car because I'm shook. I'm scared. I'm nervous, man, because I'm like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah.
And this is like one of many times we got pulled over in Fayetteville. You know, another time we got pulled over with a car full of fucking foreign exchange students, man. These niggas thought it was a joke, man. They like, oh, what's going on, officer? I was like, dude, y'all better shut the fuck up. Like, this ain't a game. You can get us shot fucking around. So, so I get home. I get to the dorm. Get out the car without even turning it off. Go around to the front. All my headlights working. I'm just like, man, I don't know what they was going to do to me. You know what I'm saying? I knew my headlights was working. I was like, the whole time, like, what y'all really want? You know what I'm saying? Like, I just don't want to go downtown for some bullshit, man. You know, my boy John, he was Mr. FSU, Fayetteville State.
Okay.
It's the most, you know, they only pick upstanding fucking people for that shit. You know, you got to have academics. You got to have extracurricular activities.
Yeah.
All that shit, right? He's Mr. FSU. Man, they pulled him over, like, right up the street, the corner from the school, took him out of his car, handcuffed him, had the dogs come through the car looking for drugs. Wasn't no drugs in there, man.
Right.
Like, it's shit like that, man, where it's just, it slowly chips away at you. Well, you like, yo, man, these people really ain't shit, man. And they job here is to police me. Yeah. So, you know, I got to be on the defensive all the time.
Yeah, I remember... what was that? A couple of weeks ago, man. Like, I got pulled over for tinted windows, right? Mm-hmm. I bought my car just like that. Like, I didn't put the tint on there or nothing. When I bought it from the dealership, it was like that, right? And I'm going to pick up my daughter, and, like, I see a Dearborn Heights police, like, officer coming from... He's going westbound, I'm going eastbound. This motherfucker pulls a U to pull me over. Now, I know I'm not speeding, and I know I got my seatbelt on. And all of this, right? So he pulls me over, and the first thing I do is roll all of my windows down, stick my hands out of the window.
Mm-hmm.
Stick my hands out of the window. Because I also know, because I'm licensed to carry a concealed weapon, that he knows that too.
Right. He ran your license plate.
Right. He ran the license plate. So I know he knows that too. And, you know, he talked about, you know, well, I pulled you over for the tinted windows. I'm like, oh, all right, man, just give me the ticket. You know, because I'm just like, I just want to leave, man. I'm not doing anything. You're just kind of fucking with me right now, right? But then there was also another incident where, like, my girlfriend, man, she was just driving her car. And she pulled over to take a phone call from her mother. And she's on the phone. She's, like, in a parking lot or whatever. And once she got off the phone with her mom, she pulls off. Police officer pulls her over, asks her why she's loitering in the area. Right? What? Yeah. So she also has a license to carry a concealed weapon. But her car isn't registered in her name. Her car is registered in her father's name. So now he's giving her shit about the fact that, okay, she has a license to carry concealed, and she declared that she had the license to carry concealed, and she had the weapon in the car, but now he's giving her shit about the car not being registered in her name. So it's just like all sorts of little shit like that, man. It's like, come on, man.
It's microaggressions, man. And that's not even talking about, I mean, you had a huge run-in with the cops with the weapon thing, man.
Yeah.
You know, Chicago. So, I mean, yeah, it's a bunch of little shit that adds up. And like I said, I hope this brother can go his whole life and never experience that. I'm a little worried about him because, in my opinion, the video is serving the purpose of trying to undo a lot of what Black people have experienced, and he don't want to believe it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been saying this for a while on the show. It's something that I think all of us could be served a little better by trying to understand. I think we as Black people have all been traumatized by our stay in America.
Yeah.
And we'll never really truly get over it. But this guy, this is his coping mechanism. His coping mechanism is he believes that if you do a certain set of things, every interaction with the cops will go fine. That's what he has to believe in order to survive.
Yep.
You know, he thinks that he's doing something that other Black people aren't, which is what's going to save him. Now, we all know that.
It don't take a whole lot.
Yeah, like it, like one, that's a high wire act, and it is actively racist if you have to be perfect when you get pulled over, else you get killed.
Yeah.
You know, so already it's a high wire act for him anyway. But he's young, and I feel like that's where he's coming from, and that's how he copes with living in a racist society, man.
Yeah, and like we said before, man, I think a lot of it, too, is simply the fact that he's young, and he hasn't had that experience yet. And unfortunately, he may come to have that experience and not really be prepared for it because he's kind of deluded himself into thinking that, well, if I just do this, then it won't happen.
Right. He's probably going to have it. That's the sad part about it is we both know at some point it's probably going to happen. Like, even if you live in a bad part of town, they overpolice you because you're in a bad part. You live in a good part of the town, then it's like, what the fuck you doing over
here,
boy?
What you doing here? What you doing here? I live here, man.
Right. Like, you going to catch it in most places anyway, man. It just sucks that that's going to be ripped from him, man. I kind of wish we could live in ignorance like that sometimes.
Yeah, it's that youthful ignorance, too, man. Like, when you don't necessarily have the knowledge of the world that we, unfortunately, in our, like, older age, are kind of burdened with having this knowledge. Like, yo, man, it's not always going to be like that. And unfortunately for you, you're going to find out soon enough that it's not going to be like that for you also.
Yeah, even if I have a strong sense of community and family anyway. So, like, even if I had never been pulled over by the cops, I still know how it goes down.
Yeah.
Because people that I trust with my life have told me how it goes down. What, I don't believe them now?
Yeah.
I'll be like, nah, man, I'm going to watch my back. Like, you know, the first time I got pulled over by the cops, I was acting, you know, in accordance with every fucking thing my dad ever taught me, you know. Put both hands on the wheel, you know, all that, bro. You know, roll down your windows, like you said, both hands on the wheel, pull over in a lit area, you know, like, you don't know what's going on with these people, man.
Yeah, not only that, like, sometimes you'll even get, like, every now and again here up in Michigan, man, you get people who are impersonating police. So if you're going to get pulled over, you want to make sure you go somewhere where it's well lit and there's a lot of people around. Because some these dudes that may be trying to pull you over aren't the police at all. They just about to fuck you up and jack your shit.
Yep.
So it's so many different things that you have to worry about, unfortunately, when dealing with the police. And these are the people who are supposed to be charged to protect you. So, yeah, man. And another thing, too, man. And this is something interesting that I was reading up on. I was reading ForHarriet.com. And they were talking about Rekia Boyd, who was shot and killed by Chicago police about 3 years ago. And they were talking, the officer who killed Rekia Boyd was acquitted. And there was a rally held for Rekia Boyd earlier this week. And a lot of folks are kind of looking at this as because not a lot of people showed up. And it gets to a point where, like, folks are kind of wondering whether or not black women are being ignored when it comes to issues like that. I know we had the Renisha McBride case here in Dearborn Heights, Michigan, as a matter of fact, where a lot of folks just kind of feel like when this type of thing happens to black women, it's not given the amount of attention that it is given to black males in the same circumstance. What are your thoughts on that?
It's definitely not. Like, they definitely do not give as much attention because, you know, I can't speak for everybody's experience in America, but from what I've seen in my life, nobody loves black men like black women, period.
Yeah.
You know, like, not even black men loving ourselves like black women love us. It's not even close. So when one of us dies, the way that they have our back is unprecedented, you know? Look at the leaders in Ferguson, you know,
black women. Yeah.
You know, some queer black women, not even, so it's not even a sexual thing of I'm choosing these people as partners. No, they just love us as brothers.
Right.
You know, and they see our humanity because of, you know, America and society and whatnot. There's a patriarchy and a misogyny to our experience here, where there's like an extra layer between black men and black women where people become so misogynistic, they don't really see them as our sisters. You know, like there's a lot of, you know, it's kind of like the Ray Rice thing. Every, you know, not every brother, a lot of brothers became the most nuanced pontificating motherfuckers you ever seen in your life.
Indeed.
When it came to that, when that came to that man hitting that woman, before, after, and during that video, whole lot of debate. Man, we see an officer hit a black dude upside the head. Man, we don't care if that dude is a criminal or whatever. We like, he ain't have to do that dude like that.
Yep.
We, you know, no debates. No, you know, nobody on my timeline trying to figure out how it goes and what he did to deserve it. None of that shit. So we know, like, we withhold that nuance for situations where we don't really empathize with the person. And these black women that are victims of police violence and more.
Yeah.
You know, that, like, that's why we, that's when we want to pull the nuance out. And to me, that shows a callousness to dealing with our sisters, man. And yeah, I 100% believe that, you know, less people show up, less people talk about it, less people support, and less people make an issue and write about it when it is a black woman. Because we had that extra layer of misogyny on top of everything, where it was, you know, we're trying to deal with the fact that, I mean, okay, so the police probably aren't the number one perpetrators on black women violence. If you want to be honest, probably black men.
Yeah, yeah.
So in this case, we're asking people that victimize black women to also be sensitive to their victimhood, and it's just not gonna happen for a lot of dudes.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, like, even with say for instance the Mayweather fight, right? Like, that's about to be one of the biggest sports spectacles in a very long fucking time. Not a whole lot of people are talking about the fact that Floyd Mayweather has been convicted of domestic violence. Not a whole lot of people are talking about the fact that boxing hasn't even suspended this dude for his domestic violence against the mother of his children. Nobody's really talking about that, but everybody's talking about whether Floyd Mayweather is one of the greatest boxers of all time. Like, is he better than Muhammad Ali? Is he better than Sugar Ray Robinson? You know, things like that. Those kind of discussions are happening amongst black men, but we aren't having this discussion about the violence that is going on against our women. And it's real disheartening to kind of see that kind of shit going on and nobody's really kind of checking anybody about it.
Yeah, though, it's amazing, man. I mean, I remember watching ESPN when Stephen A. Smith brought up the whole, like, what did Jhené Rice do to deserve to get hit?
Yeah.
And just watching the, like, it felt like my heart was breaking just watching so many brothers, like, try to come at that angle and support that dude. Like, you just like, really? Like, at the detriment of your own mother, sister, daughter, lover, like, you just like, you really on that bros before hoes shit, like, yeah. On this, like, on, like, this isn't women be taking too long to get ready to go to the get something to eat, you know what I mean? This is serious.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think, you know, as a person that, you know, I've been friends with for a while, you will vouch for the fact that I have a pretty good sense of humor about certain shit. Like, yeah. I'll laugh about a lot of shit, but end of the day, man, like, some of this shit, it just ain't funny, man. Like, it's nothing funny about, you know, getting in this situation. So people are very serious about all that, man. So, you know, I can't remember. I read a tweet somewhere. I can't remember if Stephen A. Smith or somebody said some shit like, man, Floyd Mayweather is 32-0, but it's more impressive that he's 5-0 against women. You know what I mean? Where it's just like, damn, this motherfucker got 5 domestic violence situations in his past, and here we are talking about it's about to be the biggest fight of all time. Like, nobody gives a fuck.
Yeah, man. It, you know, like, it's just... It's one of those things, man. You just kind of sit back and you shake your head, because sometimes, I'm not going to lie, sometimes I feel like I have like this, I do have like this moral superiority complex sometimes. And I know I apply it to Floyd Mayweather and I apply it to R. Kelly and shit. Like, that's just something with me though. It's like, I can't do it. Like, I can't fuck with anything that they're a part of because of the fact of, I know they did some shit that was really fucked up against some people that couldn't really do a whole hell of a lot about it.
Yeah, man, I will say, like, that's the other thing I worry about too, though, is like, the people that do feel like they have no moral high ground on them and don't judge them.
Yeah.
What have you done? You know what I'm saying? Like, when I see somebody that's like adamantly like, I support Floyd Mayweather, R. Kelly, Ray Rice, I adamantly support this person, I start thinking like, what have you done to people that makes you feel like I identify with this guy?
Yeah.
Cause I can't identify with that guy. You know what I mean? Like, what they're doing is so horrible. I can't be like, nah, sometimes you gotta rape a 15-year-old, man. I get it. Like, I don't get it. And,
right.
And nobody should get it, you know?
Right. And I think even like, and the interest in the fight, even if I was to see it, it's like, I really just hope Pacquiao beat the shit out of this dude just cause, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not watching it because I want to see, you know, who wins the belt. I'm like, yo, somebody really ought to beat his ass, man.
Yeah, it's real hard to separate the talent from the actual personal life of these dudes, you know? Especially in something like, you beat people up for a living and you also beat up women for recreation. Like, it's real hard to separate them too. You know, it's too close. So, yeah, man, I hadn't really thought about it before because I haven't had a hankering to really want to see the fight.
Yeah.
Which is different for me because, you know, I used to be like, shit, man, I used to watch every boxing match I could watch. You know, like, it's pretty much every Saturday, man. Even, you know, the bullshit boxing match, me and my homies would be over at my friend's house playing poker and watching boxing. And I don't even play poker. I'm basically just watching boxing.
Right.
You know? So, and now I'm like, man, I haven't watched it in a while. And part of it is my distaste for some of the people in it, man. And I will throw this caveat out before, before we move on to another topic. If Janae Rice was white, I don't think any of this shit goes down like this.
Not at all.
You know, and I think that's when you realize how full of shit people are. Because if you do some shit like this to a white woman, look at Greg Hardy.
Yeah.
Greg Hardy did that shit for a white woman. He ain't going to play football for 25 games. It'll be 25 games later before he steps on a football field.
Yeah.
That's essentially almost two seasons of football. Yeah. That's amazing. You know what I mean? He will miss that many fucking games, and that's not even counting the playoff game he missed. Like, he's gonna miss that much football because, was it two? I think he missed two playoff games.
Yeah.
He's gonna miss 27 games of football, which is almost two seasons worth of football. Cause he hit a white woman, man.
Yeah.
It ain't lost on me, man. I see the game.
Yeah. And a lot of folks ain't, man. A lot of folks ain't. And so, like I said, sometimes I feel like I'm fighting a losing battle with that, though. And you don't want to come across as preachy, too. You know what I mean? Like, I know I was doing that to a certain degree, where, like, especially when it comes to R. Kelly and stuff like that. like I would get tagged. Like I got tagged this week. R. Kelly's supposed to be having a concert here in Detroit with Chrisette Michelle. I would love to see Chrisette Michelle in concert. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see fucking R. Kelly though. You know right. what I mean? Like I'm not trying to get that nigga no money at all. You know? And it's just one of those things, man. Like fuck. Like I can be in my space, but at the same time, I know a lot of folks. You know, they kind of tend to overlook a lot of shit like that.
Yeah, I definitely understand. Yeah, you got to pick the moral spot that you feel comfortable. Like I'm not one of these people that's like boycott everything and all that shit. I mean, I kind of feel the opposite way too, where it's like, just because you fucked up, don't mean you get to take my entertainment from me. So
right.
If I do want to watch that boxing match, I don't feel zero guilt about watching a fucking boxing match. That has nothing to do with me. Like,
yeah,
this motherfucker beat somebody's ass, and that's on him and him alone for that kind of decision.
Yeah. Now, let's move on. I got another question to hit you up with. Loretta Lynch was finally confirmed as the Attorney General this week. Took forever for this process to go on. I remember when Eric Holder announced that he was going to step down, I didn't think he would ever even get the opportunity to actually leave the job because of how the Republican-controlled House and now Senate approached everything that Obama wanted to do. So when it comes to Loretta Lynch, what do you think is like the fairest expectation black folks can have with her in regards to law enforcement, especially with the relationship like we have with the police as it is now?
Well, see, I'm more for the milestone.
Yeah.
That first ever black female. But I think it's the same thing as with President Obama, man. Like, we don't have a dictatorship, you know? There's only so much that someone can do from the positions of power that we have because there's so many checks and balances.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm excited for her. Hopefully she can continue some of the things that President Obama has reduced, you know, like such as the sentencing laws for crack versus cocaine, such as, you know, not federally restricting states that want to do legalized marijuana sales.
Yeah.
You know, like things that there's things that she can continue, you know, like not cracking down on immigration, letting people come here and work if they want to work for a living.
Yeah.
That's actually one of the things that took her a long time to be confirmed because of that. But yeah, man, we'll see what she does. But, you know, I keep my expectations pretty low.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons that I, you know, fucking love the president. I love him. I had some very low expectations. I was like, a nigga get in the White House, they just gonna be way harder on him for being a nigga. That's it. Like, and they have been, and he still managed to achieve some pretty big milestones, in my opinion. So,
indeed,
you know, hopefully the same thing goes for Loretta Lynch, man. And you know, she got big shoes to fill because Eric Holder was the trillest, man. That dude, like, I think history will be kind to Obama from black people once he's gone.
Yeah.
And the next people come in and we realize how fucking good we had it, because ain't nobody ever got sent to investigate some racist police shit before Holder and them, like, really. You know, like,
yeah, yeah.
Like, that's a new thing. We've already gotten used to that, by the way. Like, yeah. We, soon as some shit happened, we'd be like, oh, yeah, they're going to send the Attorney General, right?
Yeah.
It's not how that's supposed to work.
We got this shit down to a science as to how it's going to break down. Every black person in America has become Nostradamus when it comes to when it comes to a black person getting killed by the police. We like, okay, here come the GoFundMe account.
Yeah.
Okay, here comes the demonization of the victim. Okay, here comes all of the lionization of the officer. Yep, we pretty much got this playbook now. We've seen this movie before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man. Yeah, but you know, another thing too with Loretta Lynch, man. At least what I would like to see, like, because one of the first things that I saw after she had been confirmed was the fact that she was supposedly had such a cozy relationship with so many different law enforcement agencies across the country. One of the biggest things that I would really love to see Loretta Lynch be able to accomplish would be to kind of bridge that gap between the police departments and the federal government and the African-American community. I know that's a huge fucking step to do or step to make, but it would be huge for her to be able to accomplish that in the short amount of time that she has, because it's only like, what, a year and a half left in Obama's presidency. Mm-hmm. So it would be a really big thing for her to be able to accomplish that, and I would love to see that.
Well, I know that she was instrumental in bringing the NYPD to justice for the Diallo? Either him or the dude that they put the plunger in his ass.
Oh shit, I don't remember that brother's name.
I can't remember that dude's name, but like, so she's she's tough on the police.
Yeah.
And I like that shit.
Indeed.
I don't give a fuck how the police feel about it, because they tough on us and they don't care how we feel. So, we need checks and balances, man. And I like somebody that we saw with Eric Garner how hard it is to win a case.
Yeah.
Against the NYPD. Shit, yeah. How hard it is to get a case to court.
Right.
So,
with Mike Brown, too.
Exactly. So the fact that she kicked somebody's ass already over this. She good with me. Like, that's the thing. It ain't just that she's black. I'm celebrating that she's black. Like I said, I have very low, you know, like, oh, cool, what a milestone. But I do expect her to come in and continue to kick ass, man. Like, I don't expect her to just roll over. And shout out to Obama and Eric Holder. They laid the groundwork for her to feel like she can get on the ground and run.
Yeah, you know? Man. Good. It's gonna be a real interesting year and a half. Coming to the end of Obama's presidency, it's going to be we're going to see a lot of shit pop off. I just got that belief in my head that it's going to be a lot of real fucked up shit happen because they know the end of Obama's presidency is coming to pass.
It does feel like it's getting worse closer you get to the end. Oh, and it was Abner Louima, a Haitian immigrant.
Okay, yeah.
Eat him and sodomized him. And she brought that shit to trial and got him found guilty. And he was sentenced to 30 years in prison.
Indeed, he should have been.
And she got another one of them for lying about it, trying to cover up for him. So, yeah, she don't fuck around.
Well, we're going to see. We're going to definitely see what exactly it is she's going to be able to pull off. I'm very excited to see what it is she's actually able to do. I really am, because of the short amount of time that she has left, with the Obama presidency being about, like I said, a year and a half left before we're at the end of his term. But we coming up on the listener feedback portion of the show. You want to really stick it around for this, bro?
Yeah, I don't mind. This is cool. All right,
we got some emails. That seems to be like the most favorite part of how people interact with the Spam Report. I need y'all to start calling the nigga, for real. Start calling the hotline, man, real talk. But I got an email here. This first email is from Renee. And Renee writes in to say... how are you, Mr. Spam? First off, let me say that I love the show. I've been listening for a while, and I'm glad that you're finally in a consistent space. It was touch and go there for a long time. Yeah, it was. So, yes, please keep it going. The second thing, I wanted to say that I feel that I have to call you out on something you said on episode 69 in response to Lavish Attributes, in response to what he said about the show Empire. During your response, you said, and I quote, "Get that respectability politics dick out your ass." Although I understand the sentiment and what you were going for, what you said was problematic in that it reinforced the notion of homosexual sex is wrong. And considering all the things you said recently in support of equal rights for homosexuals, I myself was disappointed to hear you say that. That small remark took away from a very solid and valid point you were making about respectability politics in the entertainment space. Wasn't sure if you were really aware of it because you seemed angry when you spoke, but I felt like I should pull your coat to it. And trust me when I say that I'm pulling your coat out of love. Once again, I just wanted to say I still love the show. Thanks, Renee. You know what, Renee? I was right after I said that, I was like, ooh. You know what I mean? Like, it was like I was upset, but that's no excuse for what, you know, for the how I phrased that, for how I phrased that response to that dude. Like, right after I said that, I was very much aware of it, but I just kind of kept going, you know what I mean? But I was aware of it, and I was like, that probably wasn't the best thing to say at that particular point in time. But, I do appreciate you, you know, keeping me honest about that kind of shit. You know what I mean? Because At the end of the day, what I want to do here at the Span Report is, even in disagreement, have some respectable disagreements. You know what I mean? Like, kind of keep it respectful. And that wasn't my intention to offend anybody in that. You know what I mean? Like, I was just basically, I was upset. Yeah, you were right. I was upset. But at the same time, that's no excuse for what I said. So I appreciate you, Renee, for hitting me up and calling me out on that and keeping me honest and letting me know that you were actually listening and like, yo, that was kind of fucked up. So I appreciate you, Renee, for keeping me honest.
Yeah. I mean, you know, plus that dude might enjoy that. You never know. Like, you know, one of the things I try to it is just a force of habit. One of the things I'm trying to stop saying is suck my dick.
Yeah.
Because it's an honor to suck my dick, man. Like, I don't just put my dick in anybody's mouth. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I would never, that's like, I'm disrespecting myself by just telling somebody I don't like to put something of mine in one of their orifices. That's, you know, I think we just slip into that because, you know, we're still conditioned and we've been in society so long that there's certain insults that are just the go-to insult. Yeah. And you want to say the thing that you think would hurt that person's feelings the most or make them have the most violent reaction. And in our society, being a dick in the ass, whether gay, straight, or whatever, is always going to be considered like one of the most jarring things you can do or say to somebody. You know, even if it was a woman that you said, get that respectability dick out of your ass, like, it's still going to be like, what is this doing in my ass? I didn't want this in my ass. Like, this, no thanks. So, you know, I definitely can understand the sentiment. And that's big of you to apologize for that, man, because I think, you know, like we said earlier, it's hard to push your ego aside sometimes. Because my first reaction when I get emails like that is always like, man, fuck you. I ain't do nothing wrong. But, you know, when you think about it, it's like, you're right. I definitely would not want that to be the thing that derailed my message. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And like I said, man, like, that's one of the things about when we do this, you want the feedback. You definitely want the feedback because you don't want to feel like you're talking into the vacuum, right? Like you just like nobody's listening, especially if you don't get any feedback. So when you do get the feedback, even if it's something that isn't necessarily flattering, the only thing that I ask my listeners to do is like, yo, man, if you disagree with me, be respectful in your disagreement. You ain't got to come at me sideways, man. We could talk about this like adults. And at the end of the day, even if we don't agree, we still have that respect. Like, you know what? You can still listen. I will still listen to your perspective when you write in, and we can continue that conversation. And that's pretty much what I'm trying to foster here at the Span Report. So, like with Renee, like I said, sister, I'm sorry, and I do appreciate you pulling my coat to that. Real talk. The next email I got was Chameleon 15, and Chameleon writes in to say, "What's up, Mr. Span? Just subscribed to your channel on YouTube, so I'm new to your show. I see you're over 60 episodes in, so I got some major catching up to do as I love your perspective. I don't know if you talked about this yet, but what are your thoughts on the heavy prison sentences handed down to the teachers in Atlanta for the cheating scandal going on down there? Don't you think the judge went too far?" You know what? I'm a father. I think my daughter's education is paramount to like her ability to live outside of me. Her ability to take care of herself. So the fact that you had so many teachers kind of taking advantage of that system in that way, and it the only people that, like, this isn't a victimless crime. Those kids are being affected by that. If those kids are being passed on, if those kids are taking those tests and they don't have the knowledge that those tests are supposed to gauge that they have, then that's very problematic, man. That's a whole generation of kids that don't know what the fuck it is they need to know, and they're crippled by that. And those teachers did that to them to cover their own ass. So to me, just speaking as a dad, man, no, I don't think the judge went too far at all. I don't. You know, I don't necessarily have sympathy for that. I mean, because of the fact that these kids had no other recourse, you know what I mean? Like, it's not as if these kids could, like, if they're in the public school, it's not like as if most of them could go to a private school. It's not as if most of them could go to a charter school and pay for a different education somewhere else. These kids are going there because that's where they have to go. And so for them to be in a position where the people who are entrusted to educate them and teach them what it is that they need to know to go further on in life, and to be crippled with the fact that these kids weren't being taught what they should have been, and that the test scores were being fabricated and everything else. Nah, I don't have any sympathy for those teachers at all, man. Not at all. You have anything to say about that, Rob?
Yeah, I have a little bit of sympathy for them because I don't think that they set out to embezzle money. Because that's really what they got locked up for. Like, the moral implications of it, like you just covered, are, you know, pretty bad itself. But I don't think those guys that got, those teachers that got caught up were doing it on some, like, how can I pad my checks? I think they were trying to keep their jobs. And a lot of this stems from the Bush administration with the No Child Left Behind and rewarding people for standardized testing and firing teachers for standardized test results, which is ridiculous in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because now you got teachers that teach the test. And if you really care about education, you understand how dangerous that is.
Yeah.
Because you're not teaching somebody how to think. You're teaching them the answer.
Yeah.
And that's always wrong. You know what I mean? So I feel like they came down on them unfairly, harshly. I'm not saying they should be allowed to teach again. I'm not even saying that nothing should happen to them. But when we're locking them up like they drug dealers and shit, like we giving them the same time that we give like crack kingpins and shit.
Yeah.
It feels something about that feels wrong, because I don't think those people ever got into that business for the purpose of what happened. And they basically caught them on racketeering and conspiracy, which I mean, it's really like throwing a book at them. You know what I'm saying? I hope they can appeal it and get some of that stuff reduced because, you know, I also don't think it's a good message to send to other educators, which is, you know, hey, don't fuck up because we'll send you to prison. Like, we already don't pay these niggas. And then we want to add, like, don't get too far off this course, motherfucker, because you can go to jail forever. Yeah. You know, but like I said, I when I first heard of it, I thought about it the same way, which is like, yo, really? Y'all fucking up the kids' education? Bye. And then the more I learned about it, and then the more I talked to, like, teachers, and I listened to Bomani Jones, who did a segment on it, and one of his friends was one of the teachers that worked at one of those schools.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he got any time, but he was like, I know this teacher, he wouldn't do that for the reason that the government is saying.
Okay.
Like, he wouldn't do it on some, I want to get this money, but you might do it because you do care about these kids and you want to keep them advancing. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to lose your job, because that's really what they're trying to do, is say you're going to lose your job. So, I don't know. Desperate people do desperate shit when that unemployment is the fear. And basically, man, they had to pick between unemployment and prison.
Yeah. Well, you know what? One of the things, not even just that though, that kind of like hit me in the head, is the fact that it, not even just the kids, but like when you think about, say for instance, when you're a parent and you go to, like, say for instance, if you want to move to a certain area, one of the first things you look at is what are the school system like, right? Mm-hmm. You know, what is the school system like? And if you go, you know what, like, you go to move to this city or this district or whatever, and one of the first things you look up is like, okay, this school district is doing this, right? And then you get there, you move there, and then you find out later, it's like, wait a minute, everything that I read about the school system was a complete fucking joke.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, to a certain degree, I mean, like I said, as a father, I'm just more so like, you know what, man, I'm thinking more so in the best interest of my child.
Right.
As opposed to whether or not this teacher gets, you know, I'm thinking more so like, and that's just where I'm at with it, you know.
It's not even like, I don't even feel like it's a matter of right and wrong. I mean, it's obviously just personal preference. It just seemed weird to me, I guess. It just seems like this isn't the result that anybody wanted. You know what I mean? Like, three of these teachers getting 20 years, you know?
Yeah.
You can fuck a kid and not get 20 years. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Like, we got teachers that actively fuck 3-4 kids that will never see a day in prison. And then we got these motherfuckers that going to jail for 20 years And like I said, I wouldn't have a problem with it if the argument that the government was making was, like you said, education is sacred and you guys violated that code.
Yeah.
I would actually be okay with that because that's taking a stance. When you say it's racketeering because y'all was trying to get an extra $200 on your paycheck, man, get the fuck out of here. Yeah. We know that's not what it was. They didn't want to lose their jobs because of these new standards of measuring teachers, which, to be honest, is a terrible standard of measuring a teacher. You know, like, I learned a lot from teachers that might not translate to a standardized test.
Right.
But teachers are the reason that I'm an entrepreneur today. You know what I'm saying? So they just had some faulty reasoning behind that shit. And I'm not saying they shouldn't have got hit with something, but 20 years, man, three people getting 20 years seems so excessive to me personally.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it, brother. Yeah, but you know what, Chameleon? That's how I feel about it. And that's how Rod feels about it. I appreciate you writing in, brother. Write in again. I'd like to hear from you again. Real talk. The next email I got was from, let's see, here's from Lamar. Lamar writes in to say, hey, Mr. Span, good looking on that carbon monoxide tip. I actually did that test you talked about with the matches and the water heater on my home and my mother's home. And I'll be damned if my mother's water heater wasn't leaking that stuff in the house. Oh, okay. We got the chimney cleaned out, so we're all good. Okay, that's good to hear. That's really good to hear. So thank you for putting me up on game. But not only that, when you were talking about the father and those kids, I was wondering, where was their mother and why did he have all those kids? More importantly, was she paying her fair share on the child support tip? One has to wonder if he was struggling to pay the power bill, that the child support money could have certainly helped, and maybe these kids would be alive today. And if this story was a mother and seven kids dying, everyone would be asking, where was the father and his support? What do you think? Okay, like, you're the second person that has asked me about child support in regards to this case, man. Like, honestly, I wasn't thinking about child support at all when I heard about this shit. Not like at all. I was not thinking about child support. The only thing that I was thinking about was the fact that it was unfortunate that a father lost his life, his seven kids lost their lives trying to have power in the home. And unfortunately, he misused a gas power generator in order to do that. As far as their mother was concerned, they didn't speak a whole hell of a lot about those kids' mom in the story, right? But at the same time, I just simply wasn't thinking about whether or not she was current under child support. That was the furthest thing from my mind. The first thing that I was thinking about was how fucked up it was that there are now seven people that was dead that didn't need to die. Right? So, like I said, you're the second person that asked me that. I got a poll up right now because of this. I want you to go to thespanreport.com on this episode and go vote in the poll, because this has come up a couple times since that story, and because since the last time that I talked about this, whether or not child support was important and whether or not those kids would be alive today, and whether or not this mother should have, whether or not she was current on her child support. I don't know if that's something that a whole lot of people were thinking about. Honestly, this to me, it seems like it's coming out of left field. It seems like it kind of butthurt niggas bringing up child support in a case that had absolutely nothing to do with child support. So, yeah, man, like, go to thespanreport.com, vote in that poll on whether or not when I brought up the story about carbon monoxide and whether or not their mother was current in carbon was current on child support had anything to do with those kids dying because of carbon monoxide. But me personally, I was not thinking about whether or not their mother was current on her child support. As a matter of fact, right now, I'm pretty sure that their mother's pretty fucked up because she doesn't have a seven kids anymore. So to be bringing up child support at this particular juncture, I think is kind of fucked up. That's just me, though. That's me. So
yeah, the question, too, is like, would this person feel like it was just as insensitive if the genders were reversed?
Yeah.
Because to me, the only hypocrisy here would be is if you would feel different if the genders were reversed. And to me, it's a tragedy. I don't really give a fuck whose gender is what. Like,
right.
If it would have been a father losing his kids, I would have been like, damn, that's a hell of a loss.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's all I would be thinking about, you know, and, as a father, you know, that's dealt with like custody and all that shit. I know, you know, that it ain't as simple as whatever number child support is. Right. It ain't never that simple. You know what I mean? Like my brother and stuff, like he has issues, you know, like with custody with his child and stuff. And, you know, they take care of the kid and all that. It's nothing negative.
Right.
It's never going to be as simple as this number tells you how much I care about my kids, or if I paid this number, everything in their life would be different, or whatever. They could have had a personal arrangement. They could have had a bunch of shit. And to try to play like Monday morning quarterback on some shit like that is real insensitive, in my opinion.
And not only that, though, like you take, for instance, when folks talk about whether or not a mother is receiving child support and whether or not she's using those funds appropriately, right? Is this money being used for the betterment of the children, and whether or not she's misappropriating these funds or not? Is this same kind of argument going to be brought up when it's a male that's supposed to be receiving child support? You know what I mean? So who's to say, even though this wasn't part of the story, who's to say he wasn't getting child support? And who's to say he wasn't misappropriating those funds? That's, even though that's not something that I particularly wanted to discuss in regards to this case, because it involves eight people losing their lives.
Right.
But, you know, you think about that kind of thing, like, who's to say that she wasn't? And even, if you find out that she was, then what? You know right. what I mean? Like, what are you talking about now? Because we still got eight people that's dead. That didn't have to die.
Exactly.
So yeah, man, I think that's a pretty fucked up perspective to have. I mean, I understand that some fellas are like worried about that kind of shit. They deal with child support in a very negative way, but that wasn't what I was thinking about when I was discussing it. I was basically trying to educate folks on how they can keep that from happening to them. So yeah, man, although I appreciate you writing in, brother, I disagree with that sentiment there, man. And let's see, I got another email. This one here is from Nikki. Nikki writes in to say, I forgot to send the email from work, but here it goes. Okay. First off, about the family who passed away due to using the generator for heat, that story just broke my heart. I work in the medical field, and hearing about people dying from carbon monoxide. Wait a second. Hold on. Okay. About the family that passed away. I work in the medical field and heard about the people dying from carbon monoxide, okay? I used to work in social services and would see things in people's homes that I knew weren't safe and warn them and document it. Luckily, none of my cases ever ended on the news. When people don't have enough money, they will do whatever they feel is best to keep their family stable. When I lived in Arizona, homes would be near 120 degrees indoors if people had no AC. All I could do is recommend taking your kids to a place that is cooler and free. For example, we would encourage people to go to a library, a mall, or a free outdoor water park. I told a mother who didn't have internet access and no AC in her home, she can go to the library all day and use their internet. They had free entertainment and activities for the kids, and all of this was free. The mother told me this sounds like too much trouble. So sometimes people do not want to be helped. Also, I made a rant about interracial dating. I can't remember in regards to what, but hopefully when I get to work, the email is still on my desktop and I'll send it. Also, thanks for donating to my GoFundMe. I'm still out here trying to raise money and save black lives. Black people need have more to represent them in the health field. Who's going to care that black women are more likely to die from HIV/AIDS than any other ethnic group if we aren't there to demand more help in areas that we are underserved. 56% of HIV cases are black people. 66% of new HIV cases are women. And that's from Nikki. Yeah, you know what? Like, as far as like when you talked about like, you know, trying to, you know, educate some of the people that you were dealing with in social services. Yeah, like when I have to go into a home and tell somebody that I have to leave their hot water tank off because it's leaking carbon monoxide in the house, you'd be surprised as to how many people would tell me, you know what, I'll turn it on when you leave because they have to take a shower, you know? Like, and you can't really say anything outside of, well, I would recommend you not do that. But a lot of times folks are going to do what they got to do because that's all they have at the time. They may not be able to afford to fix it. You know what I mean? They may not be able to, you know, they may be renting. Their landlord may be a slumlord. He may not come by to fix shit, but he'll be there when the rent's due. You know, so I could definitely understand when you give folks that information and they're not necessarily in a position to really receive it and to take heed to it and to really put those actions in motion. And as far as, you know, your GoFundMe, that's no problem at all, sister. As a matter of fact, I'm going to try to donate again. You know, I really do hope you reach your goal and you're able to do some work to really affect that particular area. That's definitely needed. You know, we definitely need more education as far as that's concerned. We definitely need more testing as far as HIV and AIDS, as far as black women and black people, period. We definitely need more education and we definitely need more testing when it comes to that. So if I could donate again, sister, I will. And I really do hope you reach your goal with that. Real talk. All right. And lastly, last email I got is from tried and true Reggie. His brother writes in every week, man. Let's see. My dude, Span, gotta say it was another good show, especially how you kind of lost it on those two dudes and were still able to get your point across. Good shit. But I'm hitting you up this time to ask you about Jesse Lee Peterson on that audio you played last show. Do you think he's really like that or performing? And my second question is, do you think Sean Hannity is turning the page on how he looks at these black men and police interaction? That's all I got. Peace out, Reggie. Well, I don't think Jesse Lee Peterson is acting. I think that's pretty much, I really do believe he's being sincere when he says these kind of things. I don't necessarily think that's an act when it comes to Jesse Lee Peterson. As far as Sean Hannity is concerned, I don't think he's changing his tune at all. He gave Jesse Lee Peterson a platform to speak, and he made sure that Jesse Lee Peterson had a platform to speak. He shut that other dude down so that Jesse Lee Peterson could say something, you know, could say some of that foul shit that he said. And even after that dude left, he continued to give Jesse Lee Peterson a platform to say that bullshit he was saying. So no, I don't believe that Sean Hannity is turning the page. I think Sean Hannity let that play out exactly how he wanted that shit to play out. And as far as Jesse Lee Peterson is concerned, everything he said was fucked up. I'm really not a fan of that term coon, but you know, sometimes in very rare cases, sometimes that shit applies. And in that particular instance, I kind of think that shit applied in that space. But as far as Sean Hannity is concerned, no, I don't think he's changed his stripes and no shit like that. He let Jesse Lee Peterson say that shit, and he gave that man a platform to repeat that kind of thing. So no, I don't think Jesse Lee Peterson was acting, and I don't think Sean Hannity has changed his attitude about it. What do you think, Rob?
Yeah, I agree, man. I mean, it's Sean Hannity, dog. I'm not about to seriously discuss it.
Yeah, man. I don't think he changes to it at all, man. But yeah, that was all the emails. That's all the listener feedback that we got this week. But for all of you who would like to send more listener feedback to thespinreport.com, of course, you can hit me up at the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemails and I'll play those on the show and, of course, respond. You can also send me those emails at feedback@thespanreport.com. Send me those emails. I'll read them just like I read these and respond here on the show. You can also hit me up on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms, of course, is Mr_Span. And for all of your Span Report needs, go to thespanreport.com. Everything Span Report related is available there. And before we get out, gotta let my man Rod let you guys know how to get in touch with him over at the Black Guy Who Tips.
Yeah, man. You can find me on iTunes and Stitcher. Search the Black Guy Who Tips. It's a comedy podcast I do with my wife five times a week. And the motto of the show is nothing's wrong if it's funny. You can also find us at theblackguyhotips.com, which is our website. Leave comments, sign up to be a premium member, all that stuff. Theblackguyhotips.com.
All right, right. And I appreciate Rod for coming on. Like I said, this is Rod's third show today. So definitely appreciate that, brother, for coming on. And I appreciate you guys listening. But I got to get out of here, man. Game of Thrones is coming on in not too long from now. So until next time, fam. Peace.
Peace.